Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Cuts it on the right foot. Launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. A little bit early today. It's a World Cup 4 match day. You got the nightcap at midnight. You've got Argentina at 9 o'clock. Right now, you've got Norway and Iraq underway in Gillette. I think it's Boston Stadium, even though it's in Foxborough. Yeah, it says Boston. Good times. It's great. And then France with a win, a great second half, not a good first half. They beat Senegal 3-1. All kinds of stuff to get into. We'll preview USA and Australia from Friday as well. Riding shotgun today, Madison Cruz. What's up, Maddie? How are you?
Oh, hanging out. I'm excited. Today was a nice day being able to, you know, chill, relax, and get the chance to catch France and Senegal, which was the game that I was looking forward to today as well, too. So it was fun. It was a fun day.
France relaxed and chilled for about 45 minutes. It was not a good first half from them, but they got going in the second half, and Kylian Mbappe showed that you don't really need to defend if you score two goals and become the all-time leading scorer for the French national team. I thought, were outplayed in the first 45. I thought Senegal was better in the start. They had opportunities. France really didn't do much. And then, look, Kylian Mbappe happened, and kind of the first time you started to get the sense of Mbappe growing into this game was 59th minute, went down under a challenge from Sadio Mane. There was a call to go look at the monitor for the referee from the video assistant referee. The referee waved it off. He didn't go with it. I think it's really a coin flip on the decision. Seeing it live, I didn't think it was a penalty. When you watch the replay, can you justify giving it? Yeah. But I thought he had lost the ball with the touch before there was any contact. So I was good with no penalty.
I was good with no penalty too. And I also really like that the referee stuck with his decision as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes, especially when we talk about VAR in that situation too, going to look at it. And I think honestly, the rules analyst on Fox just catching that one, I thought he explained it well too. That I think is a decision call. It's a 50-50. Mm-hmm. It's one that's going to stay on the field, whether you give it or not. We've seen it called in so many areas of the field. If yes, it's a penalty, sometimes no, it's not in other games. I like that the referee though went, he got the ear to come down and take a look at it. He looked at it and he was like, no, he said, I'm going to stick with my decision and it's a no penalty. And I like that because I agree with them. I felt like it was one where, yeah, it's already kind of going away, but I don't know if I really saw a whole lot of it. And so for me, I also feel like I would have gone no penalty as well. But I mean, hey, Kylian Mbappe made him pay for it later.
Yeah, I think in that situation, if that challenge and the contact that happens in it, which I don't think is a lot either, if it's down by the foot and the defender, Mane in this case, is going for the ball and misses and gets Kylian Mbappe's ankle or foot, I'd be fine with a penalty there. But the contact is higher, and by the time the contact happened, the ball's gone. I don't think it's playable.
That was my thing too.
Yeah, I'm good with that not being given. And I like that in general, this World Cup, as we talked about last night on AST, I think the bar has been set pretty high in general, and it's been consistent. So this was the first kind of questionable call that we've had in the entire tournament really up to this point. And I think it's a judgment call that they stuck with their original decision. No problem, but you're right. Mbappe then went off and it was about 7 minutes later. He gets the opening goal. The second goal came from Bradley Barcola. Then Senegal pulled one back in stoppage time. And then Mbappe immediately scored the other way in the 96th. Two goals. That puts him ahead of Olivier Giroud as the all-time leading scorer for the French national team. And now he has 14 World Cup goals in his career. That is ahead of Lionel Messi. That is ahead of Just Fontaine, who is the French all-time single tournament leader. He's tied with Gerd Müller, and he's trailing only in the all-time World Cup history books. Ronaldo from Brazil and Miroslav Klose. Klose is two goals ahead of him. We said coming in that Mbappe could very well end up being the all-time leading scorer at 27 years old before this tournament is said and done. There have been questions about Mbappe since his move to Real Madrid, but he still scores a boatload of goals, and he did that today in that second one. Whoo!
It gorgeous. I mean, absolutely just like class. Oh my gosh, it was so good. France is the team that I have, I think, winning the whole thing. I think with the talent they have, and the question mark is, and I completely agree with everyone when they say this too, is can they put all that talent together and can we see it all cohesively come together? Because again, you have a lot of superstars. When you list off the roster of who is on this French team, you have guys that didn't make the World Cup roster that are also still stars with the French team. Like, it's stacked. Like, I think this is a team that has so much talent now. Can you make that talent come together and play during a World Cup? Because, yes, you do need games where you got to have that superstar. But at the end of the day, there's going to be some games where you got to just, you know, grind it out. And you got to do it as a team. And you can't think so selfishly in moments like that. And so that was my biggest question coming in, I think, for France. But I thought today, first half aside, because first half was kind of dreadful a little bit, second half, I thought they actually put it back together. They found more of the moments. And I think Kylian Mbappe, listen, he's fine in the back of the net. I think he's finding those moments. And I think that's going to be key for France too. But also, you have so many other stars on that team that can do it. Dembele, you have Désiré Doué too, who can do it too. You have a lot of stars there, but I think you got to see it come together, I think, collectively. I think before then, I'm going, oh, yeah, this is the team that's winning it all. I still have a couple questions. After today, though, it's, you know, a little less, but I'm still having some other things I want to see from this team, especially continuing in the group stage.
It's not the amount of talent for me. It's the hierarchy of that talent, and that's going to be the question going forward for this group. Are guys like Ousmane Dembélé and Désiré Doué and Bradley Barcola, and I thought the player of the match today, Michael Olise, are they comfortable being second fiddle to Kylian Mbappe? Because sometimes that becomes a challenge in these kinds of teams that have so many stars who are stars at their club team and have to not be the ultimate star with their national team. Sometimes it's hard for all that to come together. We'll be watching France, and we'll see how that comes together. I do want to touch on something that was brought up on the broadcast, and of course it was pushed back on in the post-game show. The idea that France didn't have a good first half because they were arrogant is foolish, because that means Senegal didn't play in the first half at all. They just weren't there. They had nothing to do with the game. Senegal was the better team in the first half because Senegal's a good team. They're not as good as France. I don't think anybody thought that they were coming in, but they can challenge France. And I thought they outplayed them for 45 and then got outplayed by the better team in the second 45. But the idea that France was arrogant does a disservice to the opponent in this case. Senegal was good. Just like yesterday when we talked about it for Spain, and there was a lot in the Spanish press, not saying they were arrogant, but really just criticizing Spain and acting like there wasn't another 11 guys on the field. Cabo Verde was very good yesterday. I thought Senegal was really good for 45 today and then couldn't compete in the second 45.
I think you, Jason, I'm really getting nervous that me and you are starting to like read each other's minds a little bit, because I was going to bring up that point if you didn't bring it up before. I think we always tend to lean whenever there are these matches where it is, you know, more of a David versus Goliath. We always tend to lean where if the David ends up getting more of the better looks or the better moments, it's always, oh, well, Goliath, this is bad. Or it's always leaning more on that side where it's always, oh, well, this was bad. They were arrogant. They didn't play well. But again, I mean, you look at these other teams and, you know, that's completely just forgetting that they existed. Senegal was the better team in the first 45. And unfortunately, France were able to come out and they were able to prove that, you know, why they're one of the contenders in the first place. That's what they did. But to say that, that means Senegal didn't show up, and they did show up.
Yeah, I thought Senegal was really good. They just couldn't do it for 90 minutes against a team that has as much talent as maybe anybody in this tournament. France survived the scare. They walk away. Kylian Mbappe has the record-breaking night. Up next, France will play Iraq on Monday. Iraq and Norway right now in the 13th minute in Foxborough, and it is scoreless. It's been kind of a back-and-forth game, honestly. Iraq has stood toe-to-toe with Norway so far. Norway will play Senegal on the same day, on Monday, at MetLife. When we come back tonight, the defending champions take the field for the first time in this tournament. Argentina, they open their World Cup defense against Algeria. Lionel Messi is about to do something that nobody in World Cup history has ever done. We'll let you know what that is on the other side of the break. You're listening to Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
To more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app, and on the 92.9 The Game YouTube page. You can always get Atlanta Soccer Tonight in all of those places. You can get the podcast on Off the Woodwork, either on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we've been doing this since May 31st. We're going until July 19th, 50 days of World Cup coverage. And it really feels like now the tournament is getting underway, as I'm joined by Madison Cruz tonight. Argentina, the defending champions, are taking the field tonight against Algeria in Kansas City. There's a lot of eyeballs on this one.
Well, no. Come on. We got to, for people who are listening and aren't on the YouTube, got to talk about what you're repping right now.
Well, of course. I mean, for people who might be stumbling into this and they're like, why does he sound extra excited about Argentina? The first national team that I got a chance to see when I was a kid was Argentina. The first player that made me fall in love with the game was Diego Maradona. They went on. I saw the semifinal in 86 and then watched the final. And I've been hooked on the game ever since. Then, of course, followed the U.S. men's national team on their journey to get into the 1990 World Cup. I had a great conversation with Chris Henderson about his experiences with the 1990 World Cup team, where he was the youngest guy in that team for the U.S. men's national team. So I have, it's not split loyalties. I have two teams that I love, and I get a chance to support my home nation. And also I have another one that made me fall in love with the game. I mean, there's just no other way around it. Like, I wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't seen Argentina in 86. So we were really lucky with Atlanta United to see a player who was part of the 2022 World Cup winning team. He didn't play much. He was a late add to the team, but Thiago Almada, who I said it many times while he was here, I don't know if we'll ever see a more talented player play in Atlanta. He was that good. And I don't think he was all the way appreciated as much as he should have been, because he was young and he was still figuring out, I think, how good he was. But he's amazing. And he could be a big part of this team. I had to rep and get the Thiago Almada Argentina jersey for this World Cup, number 16. So I'm excited. Excited just that this team's getting on the field, because I think we always have this thing about World Cups, and it's been weird with this one. A lot of the favorites are just playing in the back end of match day minus or match day one. So we saw Spain yesterday. We saw France today. We see Argentina today. We see England tomorrow. Those were the top four ranked teams coming in. So it's been a nice build up to now. It's like, all right, now we're getting into the business end of the tournament.
It's been cool. I mean, because normally you get some of like the heavy hitters like right early on, like right to start the opening match, or, you know, especially the next couple of days. And so the buildup has been really cool. And I'm excited to see Argentina tonight, I think, because I've been anticipating this one as well, because I do think out of all the favorites, I think, to win, like Argentina, to me, I think obviously has the blueprint no matter what. My question mark, obviously, is when you look at age and everything like that too, will that come into a factor? But listen, I mean, Messi, I mean, I still think that he can continue to play forever at this rate. Honestly, I feel like every time I see him, I'm like, how is he getting better? Like, I don't understand.
He's one of the most competitive people to ever play professional sports.
Oh yeah. And I love
that. He keeps finding a way to get better.
Yeah. And you, and like, I think that's the thing that you need, like, especially as an athlete and even just as a player, like, I know for me, like, I think anybody too, I think the more competitive you are, I feel like that's a good characteristic sometimes. Sometimes it can be a little, you know,
For some it can be,
but I will say, I think in this standpoint, especially for when you see everything with Argentina, with Messi, I mean, there's a reason why he has the resume he has, and that's why. And it's because of how hard he worked for this moment. And I love it. He's the GOAT. And I'll say that he is the GOAT. And I'm pumped to see him play tonight.
Yeah. I mean, if you love the game, you have to love watching Lionel Messi play it. If you don't and you say you love the game, I have to question how you love the game, because I don't get it. Like, he is just absolutely brilliant in what he does as a competitor. You know, if you're not super savvy on like what he does on the field that makes him so good, because he's not big, he's not super fast. I think he's incredibly quick, but he's not super fast. He's not strong. What is it? I think, one, he's incredibly skilled. He has one of the best relationships with the ball of really any player we've seen since Diego Maradona, in that he can do anything he wants with the ball at any time.
Yeah.
And he has such a, I think, field of vision. You know, if you want to compare it to U.S. sports, I think if you look at a point guard and how they see passes that your average player doesn't, like the elite passing point guards. I mean, we saw Aaron Atlanta at times with Trae Young, where he would make a pass and nobody saw coming.
Yeah,
Lionel Messi does that because he has the vision, the ability, the competitiveness, and I think the supreme confidence to always pull it off. I always go back to the comparison with Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan was the ultimate competitor. And I think, you know, all of us getting to see The Last Dance kind of brought that back into modern times in the last decade, to the point that, you know, I mean, it's Jordan Brand and Nike with an Adidas with Messi. He's like their guy. They did the boots this year, and they've kind of done the advertising campaign, El Último Tango, The Last Dance. You know, like, it's, this is a big, big deal. And tonight, and I teased it before we came into this segment, tonight he's going to do something that nobody's ever done. He comes into tonight with 199 appearances for Argentina. He's got 117 goals for Argentina, but he's going to make his 200th appearance for the Argentine national team tonight. He's going to be the first player in World Cup history to reach 200 caps during an actual World Cup match. He's played in 26 World Cup matches in 5 World Cups. So this is World Cup number 6 for him. Just unbelievable, the longevity. And yeah, can he still do it like he did 10 years ago? No, not the same, because he's 10 years older. But can he still do things, and maybe do things better than he did 10 years ago in some ways? Yes, he can still be that guy.
Because again, I think when we talk about the competitiveness and the level of greatness for Messi and his intelligence of seeing the game, yeah, there might not be things he can do now that he did maybe a couple of years ago, but he makes up for that, and he knows how to help the games when maybe he couldn't have done that before. That's what separates it. And I think especially too, it's being able to acknowledge, oh, hey, I don't think I can do this like I did years ago, but here's how I can help in this way, and here's what I can do instead to still help the team and get forward. And that to me is what separates it. And like, you know, we have the conversations about, you know, who's the GOAT, Ronaldo or Messi, whatever. You have your preference, whatever. I will say I've been getting a lot of TikToks because A, my TikTok for you page is just right now all football stuff. But I mean, one of the great things I love, it's something that Ronaldo said like about it. And it's like, you know, he pushes me to be greater just like I push him. Like, yeah. And it's a back and forth. It's that competitive element of it, because you always want to do that. And I think especially for Messi, like, that's the one thing I love about Messi, especially with the way he plays the game and what he does with the game, but also to his intelligence of reading the game, of knowing maybe I can't do this, but this is how I can help. And just the other things he does. Like, I love it. I love a player like that.
Yeah. What's maddening when we do some of these debates about who's the greatest and who's the best right now is it becomes either or. And
yeah,
no, I mean, for for who is the best, yeah, you got to make a decision. You got to make a pick. But that doesn't mean that Cristiano Ronaldo, in my opinion, isn't one of the greatest players to ever play the game. No, okay. Not at all. He's amazing. And what he's been able to do to go from being a tricky dribbling winger to being one of the best number nines the game's ever seen, that's amazing. And his work ethic is crazy. Like physically, what he can still do, crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I just think Messi's better because I think he's more of the goal scorer and assister. And I think he's gotten to the point later in his career where he still scores a lot, but he is more of a playmaker than maybe he was at a younger age. And that's something that he's going to need to do in this tournament. I think you look at the talent around him and you look at guys who were on that team 3.5 years ago. You look at Julian Alvarez, you look at Enzo Fernandez, you look at Lautaro Martinez, who I think is coming into this tournament not really being talked about a lot, and he's going to be the beneficiary of a lot of these passes from Lionel Messi, and also the gravity of the opponent going towards the Argentine 10, and that's going to free up space for Lautaro, who just won Serie A with Internazionale and is in the form of his life. He was not healthy last time in the World Cup, still contributed to a point. I think you've got a lot of young guys who have a World Cup under their belt. Then you have some new faces. Thiago Almada's in a different role in this team now. He's going to play more. Nico Paz coming in after a great season with Como in Italy. I think the core of the team is 3.5 years older. So I want to see how Lionel Scaloni balances the young guys breaking through with the old veterans who have been there and done that and know how to handle it.
Same. And I think I'm really interested as well because they're also facing a team that I don't think I've seen like enough to really form an opinion on. But I'm excited to see how they play in Algeria. I think it'll be a really interesting matchup. And I think for both sides of the coin, that's why it's one of the ones I'm anticipating. And then obviously I'm going to be a sicko and I'm going to stay up till 12 a.m. to possibly catch the next game. Maybe. Who knows? We'll see if I actually can't actually stay awake. I'm kind of tired, not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna pull that one off this time around. Erling Haaland has scored his first World Cup goal, Norway leading 1-0 against Iraq in the 33rd minute. Haaland is just inevitable, as Rope says in the chat. Wow. I totally agree. Just the Viking warrior. I mean, he just always is going to find that open space. Let's see if Folarin Balogun can be inevitable for the U.S. men's national team. He was in game one. Can he do it again in game two? We're going to find out on Friday. When we come back, we're going to turn to the U.S. MNT, who put up the biggest English language rating they have ever done in World Cup history in game one. And now you get game two coming up on Friday with even more hype as they get ready for Australia. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered.
With Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Busy day around the World Cup. I'm Jason Longshore, Madison Cruz along with me. And Iraq have come back to tie it against Norway with a great goal to level this one. It's the 41st minute. It's 1-1 in Foxborough. And this was a group, Maddie, that, you know, we talked a lot about France. We talked about Senegal. Norway was kind of the unknown because we haven't seen them in a World Cup for so long, but they've got Erling Haaland and they've got Martin Odegaard and they've got so much talent. Iraq, you kind of thought, oh, this is a really tough group for them. And they were unlucky in the draw, but they're 1-1 and maybe get to halftime level with Norway.
I feel like it's been like a very stretched game too. Yeah. Like it's been back and forth. Like Iraq has held their own, I thought, against Norway a little bit. And you know, you get the buildup too, and then the ball to play up for the cross is so well placed. It's so good. Like I think that was what I was most shocked about looking at it. I was like, ooh, that was perfect. And then I mean the cross and the header in, it's just chef's kiss.
It was great work out wide on the left, and the winger couldn't beat the defender, and he didn't panic. And that's what is such an interesting element when you have the confidence to do that. You didn't force it. You didn't go for it when you couldn't beat the guy. You held it up, and then you got a run. And it's the kind of runs that we talked about with the U.S. men's national team. This was in a condensed space. This wasn't the run out of the middle third into the attacking third, but it's that same space on the field, that channel between where the fullback and the center back would be. When midfielders make that run, or when you get that secondary run here, you know, everybody's expecting the winger to put in a cross. He can't get there. He can't do that. So he holds it, gets that run, and nobody tracks it. And then it's the cutback cross to the back post. Great header, great goal for Iraq. It's 1-1. For the U.S., one of the players who would make that kind of run is Christian Pulisic. We have to see if he's going to be healthy enough to make that run on Friday against Australia. Pulisic worked out on his own again on Tuesday, second straight day of individual training. The rest of the squad practiced in Irvine, California. The Federation is calling it day-to-day for Pulisic as the Vikings just scored a second goal. So Norway's back up 2-1. You might want to turn this one on and watch it with us on whatever channel you so choose, on Telemundo or Fox or on your streaming services, because this one is wild between Norway and Iraq. Wow. But Christian Pulisic is day-to-day, according to the Federation. Played 45 minutes against Paraguay. It was great in that 45 minutes. He got an assist on Folair and Balogun's goal. He created an own goal. He had taken a knock in training before the game, and Maurizio Pochettino did not tell anybody that, because why would he? Because then it just puts a target on that.
Exactly.
So we didn't know. It happens. Then he gets hit again in the same spot. It tightens up during halftime. He wasn't able to go. He still hasn't been able to train. That's a little worrisome. Mm-hmm. You want to see him get at least a training session in, because if he can go 45 to 60, I would start him because of what he brings to the team. Because this is a trickier game than we thought it was going to be coming in. Most everybody thought Turkey would take care of Australia. They did not. Australia stood up and played great. So now this is the game that really feels like it will decide who wins the group in Seattle. 3 o'clock on Friday. You can join us at McRae's on the Beltline for that match. You can watch it with us. We'll be on for Atlanta Soccer Tonight from 6 to 8 afterwards. But let's do the negative scenario first. You don't have Christian Pulisic. How can the U.S. make up for not having Christian Pulisic in this game if he is unavailable?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a loss for sure. I think definitely, because especially it's what you're talking about. It's what he brings out onto the field. I think if he is good to go for 45, 60, you definitely start him. I think especially in a game against Australia, if you can get on the front foot early, if you can find two goals really early in that first half, I think you're looking pretty nice, especially with Christian Pulisic there. If he can't, I think that's been a big question mark, especially I think when you look at the attack as well. You got a lot of players that can come in and can help you with that. Honestly, and I'll give you one that I don't know if you agree with me, and maybe I'm the only one. I would love to see if that can happen. Maybe Ricardo Pepi takes that spot.
That would change it a lot, because then you'd be in a little bit different sort of shape, because Pepi would go higher up the field than Christian normally would. I think Pepi has the ability to do it. He just hasn't. I think your safer bet is probably the sub that you made with Sebastian Berhalter coming in, starting, pushing McKinney and Tillman higher up the field. The wild card, and this is why you bring him, Gio Reyna. You know, like, he is your wild card. He's probably the most like for like in terms of a guy coming off the bench and doing the things and being in the positions that a Christian Pulisic would be. And, well, he got you a great goal to seal that one off and get the 3-goal win. So if you have to turn to Gio Reyna, he's in good form at the moment.
And he's riding hot, too. And I think especially if you don't have a player like Christian Pulisic, who, besides not wearing the captain's armband, like, he's Captain America for a reason, and in what he brings up top, I think you're most like for like, especially when you look at, I think, a more mental side and maybe a way to help, I think, push that energy more. You do bring in a player like Gio Reyna, especially the goal that he got. You saw the reaction from not only the players, but the bench from Mauricio Pochettino himself. I think if anything, that gives another wave of confidence, I think, for the side, and even for Gio Reyna too, getting the opportunity as well to step up. I wouldn't be shocked if you see maybe he's in the lineup if Christian Pulisic isn't good to go. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I think that's your most like for like. I think in a perfect world, you can get at least 45 out of Pulisic, and then you decide where you are at that point in the game. If you, you know, if you have a lead, maybe you go Berhalter. If you're chasing the game, maybe you go Reyna, and you just kind of make the feel on where it is, because I think the rest of the group probably stays. I mean, you've had a full week. You're not having to worry about fatigue or anything just yet. It's been about as good of a start to a World Cup as you could possibly have for the U.S., and it hasn't just been on the field. The numbers about how everything was received on Friday, and this is across the board. I mean, the city of Atlanta put it out today. Over 110,000 people have gone to the FIFA Fan Festival since it opened on Thursday. It was full for the U.S. match. I mean, you've seen the videos, you've seen the pictures. So 100,000 plus people have been in downtown Atlanta since the World Cup started. Fox, their rating of 18 plus million as a rock nearly tied it, but put it wide. Fox's rating of 18 plus million across Fox TV, Fox One streaming, across Tubi streaming. That is the most watched FIFA Men's World Cup telecast in English language U.S. history. Up 132%. Up 132% from the first 2022 group stage telecast on Fox. That's gigantic numbers. They had over 21.5 million watching towards the end of that. Most streamed English language U.S. men's national team match in World Cup history. I haven't seen the streaming numbers from Peacock, from Telemundo. I know the Telemundo TV rating was close to 9 million. The U.S. match outdrew any game in the NBA Finals. It outdrew most other major events on television outside of the NFL and outside of the Super Bowl. It was that big of a deal. And that's where we are with this tournament right now. The amount of stories, the amount of things coming out of it, and more importantly, the amount of excitement for this U.S. men's national team at the moment. It's really, really cool to see. And I think Friday, as I said on the pregame last Friday, I thought that would happen. I said, I think this is going to be the most watched. It's a really good time slot for the East Coast, for the West Coast, for the whole country. This one is different. It has the potential to be even better at 3 o'clock on the East, noon out West. It's great for the families and kids. It might not be the same in terms of the public viewings, but I think the overall rating between streaming, between TV, between English language, between Spanish language, with the hype that you've had for 7 days now going into this game, I think this one could be even bigger on Friday.
I agree with you. And I'm also really excited. I unfortunately won't be with you guys at McKay's, but I will be over at Nofo Bruco with my family watching the game. But I'm excited to, I think, experience it from another viewing point, another watch party as well. You have so many going on, I think, not only in the state of Georgia, but I mean, all over the country, watch parties. I wouldn't be shocked if maybe you got some TVs on in the office. Maybe you got some... Maybe some, hey, you know what? We're going to push those meetings back later. We're going to maybe tune into the USA game at 3. I wouldn't be shocked if that happens either. No, I think not only because you saw the way the US played against Paraguay and how big that was, but also too, the stakes of this game now is that the US could clinch the round of 32 if they win against Australia. And if you get that tie as well against Paraguay and Turkey. But you could clinch, and that's huge too.
Yeah, I think if you get a point, you clinch going through. If you win the group, depending on what happens in that other game, you could clinch winning the group on Friday. Again, it's the perfect script for the U.S. men's national team that you would have wanted to draw up for this tournament. You got the start that you wanted. It wasn't just a win. It was an exciting win. You scored a bunch of goals. You've got superstars galore happening right now with Folair and Balogun, with Weston McKennie. So many guys playing so well. Alex Freeman, who we've talked about a lot. Chris Richards. So many different stories of so many good performances. And you get that full week of build up to this. I think when we talk about Australia, we do have to, and I know a lot of people are trying to make this into a grudge match. They played last fall. The U.S. won. I thought that was one of the games where we started to see this vibe come out of this team. Australia is probably going to look for bulletin board material playing the hosts, but I feel like there's a little bit too much of an effort to find it right now.
Yeah, because I mean, I think especially in this matchup, like, you know, yeah, you're looking for things to help motivate. But I think the one thing for the U.S. is that the U.S. knows that Australia is a team that can is very threatening. Like, I don't think that Mauricio Pochettino is not taking this as a game of, oh, it's going to be easy for us. No, I mean, especially with the performance you saw against Turkey and familiarity there with it, too. I mean, like, and also, A, what we've seen throughout the entirety of the group stage so far. I mean, you've seen Cape Verde, you've seen a lot of those teams come in and silence some of the top contenders of the tournament. Like, you're not going to do that. And I think, especially, I think when you look at this game, yeah, I think it's going to be a battle. I think especially Australia's maybe riding on some of the other noises they've heard from outside. I'm not talking about US at all, but voices probably from Turkey beforehand too. You're probably still riding on that a little bit. But I don't think it's going to be specifically from the US or from Mauricio Pochettino or anyone, because I think all of them know that, yeah, this is a game that, A, we're not just going to sit there and think that it's a cakewalk, because it's not going to be.
Yeah, so many people are trying to find something in saying that all American pundits are saying Australia has no chance, which is not true.
No.
Mike Grella, who is a great pundit, I really enjoy his work on CBS Sports and on the Golasso Network, especially covering the Italian league. Grella said that he didn't rate Australia. That's one guy. And that's his opinion, and that's fine. I mean, there's been a lot of opinions. If we want to, you know, go to this side of it, Tony Popovich kind of upset some people after the draw when he really didn't seem to mind that you were in a group with the host. He didn't say that this is a difficult group. He didn't act like it was hard at all. He said, we're satisfied. And some people took that as being arrogant. So you can play the game both ways. You're always looking for an edge. Let's go back to what we just talked about with Lionel Messi and being super competitive and the comparisons to Michael Jordan, who would make up things to create an edge. Messi probably does the same thing in his head, and both of these teams are fully capable of doing that, whatever it's going to take for them. But I think the kind of vibe that we're getting here on Tuesday before a game on Friday is that this game could have a lot to it, a lot of physicality to it, a lot of pressure on both teams. And I really think whoever handles the pressure, not just the pressure of the actual match defending players, I think the pressure of the moment, whichever team handles that, is probably going to be the one that comes out with 3 points in this one. We got the rest of the week to get you ready for the U.S. and Australia on Friday at 3. But coming up next on AST, we're going to take a trip around the World Cup. We've got some injuries with one of the favorites in England. We've got some updates on Cabo Verde and their goalkeeper, who is now an international celebrity. We've got some updates on Colombia as they get ready to start the tournament and more. It's all on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We're early. You might be used to hearing us late. No, it's not close to 11 p.m. Not yet, anyway. Argentina's got to play at 9 o'clock. We're waiting on the starting lineup for that. Messi making his 200th appearance. All kinds of World Cup news to catch up on in this segment, though, alongside Madison Cruz. I'm Jason Longshore. Let's start with another number out of our friends over at Fox. 10 million plus for the Brazil-Morocco match on Saturday. That's the most watched non-U.S. men's national team group stage telecast in English language U.S. history. This is the kind of stuff that this tournament is doing. We talked about it in the last segment about the numbers that the city of Atlanta has announced that attended the FIFA Fan Festival in its first few days of activity. It's back on Thursday. So much happening with this tournament right now. One of the big stories is somebody that we had a chance to see firsthand at the stadium yesterday in Vocinha. So I was checking the number. We talked about it last night, how his Instagram followers has blown up since the match. And a lot of that was thanks to his performance. Some of that was thanks to Brazilian TV, who has been streaming the game, and they pushed for it when he was at around 30,000 followers. I checked it at the start of the last segment, and it was 9 million. He's over 10 million now. He's getting a million followers an hour, like a segment here on AST at this point. We can't take credit for it, but I mean, I'm following him now. I'm one. Like a million in not even an hour. This is crazy. No.
It's wild. It's actually insane. But listen, I mean, with what he did as well, I mean, like, it's incredible. I think that's what this World Cup is doing. It's just, I think it's really highlighting, I think, a lot of countries and a lot of places, a lot of players that maybe a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know otherwise. And he put on a stellar performance at Atlanta Stadium yesterday. I mean, it was incredible. I watched back some of the saves, I think, last night, and I think I sat there just going, ooh, okay. Like, he was incredible. Honestly, well-deserved. I'm happy for him.
10.2 million followers as of this second. It's wild. I mean, just how fast that has blown up. Cabo Verde have gotten a lot of people's attention after yesterday. We talked about it last night on the show. Four draws in four games. That's the first time that it happened since 1958. It is funny, though, with all of these numbers that are undeniable about how big this tournament is right now, how all these kinds of mega sporting events go, where in the lead up, it's all about conversations of negativity and can it match the hype and all those sorts of things that happen, whether we're talking Olympics, whether we're talking a World Cup, whether we're talking other major international events. It's funny that after, what, not even a whole week yet, we haven't even got to the week mark of this tournament, not everybody's played yet, you're starting to see some of the people trying to score the social media clout with silly arguments. People upset about draws, for example. People really getting bent out of shape about the hydration breaks. So those are two very different groups of people that are trying to score clout. Let's start with the ties conversation. It's a group stage. It's like a miniature season. You are playing eight games if you win this thing. You can't play overtime every game. And this isn't like other sports where it's not like hockey, which is very physically demanding. Hockey will go to overtime and they will keep going and they will have their shootout eventually at the end of regular season games. Hockey has unlimited substitutions. It's extremely physically demanding, but you have unlimited substitutions. You have unlimited substitutions in every other of the major sports that we're talking about. You don't have that here. So you have some physical demands. You get into extra time and penalties in the knockout rounds because you have to have somebody advance. But in the group stage, you're not adding extra time onto these games, and it creates another layer of strategy in terms of getting out of the group. So, like, that silly argument to me is just a waste of time.
I mean, you don't want an MLS Next Pro where we do go all the way through and then we have penalties afterwards to decide who gets the point.
If you think the Europeans are yelling about hydration breaks and people showing a commercial during it, could you imagine the reaction to that one? Oh, wait, no, I can because I lived it when MLS did it at the first team level in the early days of the league, and people lost their minds. So look, the people who are doing the, like, oh, I don't like a sport that has draws. The people who are doing that argument, like, seriously, I'm going to ask that they put down the newspapers from the 1980s and get some new material and just get on board. And if you don't want to, if you're not a soccer person, that is completely cool. No worries about that, because people who love sports in this country, there are some sports that they love more than others, and there are some sports out of the major ones that maybe they don't really love. But for whatever reason, some people think they can get away with the shots at soccer, where maybe they don't do that in other sports that they just don't like as much. It's silly. It's outdated. You know, you'd think at 2026 that would be at least new material, but No, not so much. The other one that is new material is some of the international soccer people who are looking for something to yell about, and they're blaming the United States on it, which has nothing to do with it because FIFA is not based here and FIFA is not run by the United States. And if anybody thinks that it is, really, it takes about 30 seconds on a Google search to learn that FIFA likes the money in the United States in terms of doing tournaments here, but they do not really listen to U.S. soccer on a lot of things, and they never have in their history. So don't blame the hydration break thing on the U.S. That's dumb, and it's happening, and people are now like, ooh, yay, there's some fans who booed the hydration break. Yay, they're doing the right thing. They're standing up for what's right. Yay! No, because Maddie, I might be losing my mind. It's been a lot of shows here on the station over the past couple weeks, but I seem to remember last summer during the FIFA Club World Cup, a whole lot of complaints about the heat to the point that some teams put their bench players in the locker room in the first half to be performative and cry about it. So we got to have hydration breaks. We got to have hydration breaks. It's so hot. And now you have hydration breaks and it's scheduled in the middle of the half and it's 3 minutes. You know how long it's going to be because we never knew before. It'd just be whatever the ref wanted it to be. And yes, from a competitive integrity standpoint, every game in the tournament has them instead of just some. But now it's evil. It's just pure evil, according to some people. I can't keep up with the arguments anymore. I can't.
I feel like at some rate, too, it's getting to a point where the conversation's been done so many times that when you tweet something or when you say something, you're doing it just to get a reaction. And listen, if you want some clicks, that's fine. Get some clicks. Yeah. Do what you got to do. But like, I see it and I'm just like, really? Again? Like, there's so many other things you could talk about, like Cape Verde. You could talk about, you know, Frank. You could talk about so many other teams. You could talk about so many things. Why that? No, I mean, it's funny to me because, again, it's you have to have hydration breaks. I think the argument, obviously, I saw it a lot yesterday because, again, the Benz is obviously in a closed stadium. You have the roof there and everyone's like, oh, you have a hydration break and it's, you know, maybe 70 degrees in the stadium or whatever. It's like, yes, because, again, if you're going to have a hydration break in other games, you do have to have it in every game because it does become an advantage. Like then you're going to have people complaining that it's not fair that some people have hydration breaks and get an opportunity to, and you don't. Like,
yeah, I would complain about that because it's again, competitive integrity.
Yeah. You're now seeing that it's being used. And again, if coaches are smart, they're utilizing it as an opportunity to maybe train strategy, to talk to players, say, hey, this is what's going on. This is how we fix it. Yeah. Like I don't understand it. It makes me upset because there are so many other things we could be talking about when it comes to this World Cup and the fact that so many people are choosing and so much of the media is choosing to highlight that one side of it. It's dumb. I think it's actually dumb. And it's dumb. Just at the point blank, it's stupid. It's dumb. I think if you're going to continue to talk about it, find something else. There's so much other things you could talk about in this tournament that probably would get you better clicks.
Yeah, it's silly. It's a waste of time. This is a tournament that's been a joy to watch. I think the hydration breaks have made the games better. I think now there is something that has been interesting about the hydration breaks. You are seeing what we talked about coming into this tournament. You would see momentum swings coming out of them. Some teams come out of the break better and they've been able to flip the game. Others have struggled and haven't really gotten going again after the break either. Some you've seen tactical changes during the break. That is great for the game. It makes for better matches. And so far, the tournament has been full of really good, interesting matches. There's been very little boring soccer in this tournament. The hydration breaks have been a big part of it. I will be really clear. And I know a lot of people, again, to score points with the cool lunch table crowds, they get invited the next day. They will do the thing about being mad about commercials during the break. Now, I've said it from the jump. I would not, if it was my decision, I would not run a commercial during the break. I would have my analyst talking about what teams need to do during the break to change the game or maintain what they're doing It's an opportunity to dig deeper into the game. I wouldn't do it. But if we're going to talk about how we want the game to grow, and yes, financially is one way that it grows, and yes, to grow some of the other things, you have to grow the finances. It adds an opportunity to do it. I think Telemundo has nailed it with the way that they've done it, because they have used it as an opportunity for more analysis, but they have also been able to work in a creative way, advertising that has not detracted from the viewer experience. I really enjoy the way they've done it. If you watch games from other countries consistently, and I'm a sicko, I do, you see how other countries' broadcasts utilize advertising. It can be done. And I've argued this for years that U.S. networks can do better with it, because that's always one drawback that people have is like, well, we don't want to put this game on because you only get so many commercial breaks. You have to be more creative because of the way the game is structured, but it can be done. Now you have something that's changing the game, I think, for the better. I think every match has been better in this tournament because of having hydration breaks. But if you want to be a purist and if you want to get the invite to the cool kids table, you got to take shots at it. I don't really care about sitting at that table. I'm going to sit over here and we're going to talk about what's happening in the game and give you our passion and give you our excitement. And coming up next, we're going to give you the 3-4-3, because that's how we always close out an AST episode. This time, you are going to get the three keys tonight for Argentina to defend their title. We're going to talk about four headlines and three things that have made us smile over the past 24 hours. All coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
This will be a quick one. It is AST on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We got to get out of the way for Georgia baseball. And as two Georgia fans here on the show, Madison Cruz and me, go Dogs tonight. They're going to have to win to stay in the College World Series. We'll see if they can do that. You'll be able to listen to it starting at 7:40. But before that, we got the 3-4-3. Brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three keys for Argentina to defend their World Cup title. Their journey starts tonight in about an hour and a half. Four headlines from around the tournament and three things that make us smile. Let's start with the keys for Argentina. And this is for the tournament. And if you win the World Cup, you have to get through eight games. You don't have to win all eight, but you have to get through eight matches. That's a lot. That's one more than the World Cup has ever had before. So number one for me is you do have to manage Lionel Messi's body. You don't have to worry about his motivation, but he's going to turn 39 years old in 8 days. He's been very good for Miami this season in Major League Soccer, 13 goals in 16 matches in the calendar year, also with Argentina. It's not about whether he wants it. It's just, can his body hold up at its best over eight matches at the age that he's at and dealing with heat? I think if anybody can, it's Messi, because he doesn't run a ton. He runs at the right moments. And Maddie, this is one we've talked about a lot, the supporting cast. That's number two for me, the keys here. And I think Thiago Almada is going to be part of this more so than he was 4 years ago. I think Julian Alvarez, Enzo Fernandez, two young players who really broke through last World Cup, now are two of the best in the world at their positions.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm looking at Julian Alvarez as well. I think I'm looking at him, especially in those moments, to help Argentina. I mean, I think that's the thing. The other thing, you know, and I talked about it too, you talk about the age with this Argentina team. I don't think we're talking about the young talent that's also involved, especially with Argentina as well. You have a lot of those players who are coming in and are getting starting minutes with this side as well. I think they're going to be key in this tournament, especially you have a couple of those guys that do have World Cup experience. I think you're going to be relying on a lot of them, especially for Argentina.
I think you're going to rely on somebody that we have seen play a whole lot during his time in Atlanta, in Thiago Almada. It's why I got the jersey. It's why I repped. I needed an Argentina jersey. It had been a minute since I'd gotten one, and I really like the regular Argentina jersey this year. I like the secondary jersey, too. And I've often went for a secondary jersey because their style stays the same. But I wanted this one specifically. And once Thiago got his number assigned, that's it. Because for me, he's going to be a big part of this. He's the most like for like for Messi in terms of playing in a similar manner. He's not Lionel Messi. He's very, very good, though. And he has similar mannerisms and pops up in similar spots. So the rest of the group doesn't have to change as much if Almada is in that spot where Messi normally would be. Number three on the keys, and yeah, it's a journey, but you don't want to have to repeat the stress that you had in 2022. You lost the opener to Saudi Arabia. You were midway through the Mexico game in game two, and it was looking scary that you might be eliminated. And then Leo did what Leo does, and he scored a great goal, and Enzo Fernandez scored, and Argentina got through. You want to keep it easy. You've got an older team in some places, in some key places. You want to leave the stress off of them for as long as you can. So you got to start well. We'll find out tonight, starting at 9 o'clock against Algeria. Four headlines from around the world. Number one, Roberto Martinez. He is leaving Portugal after the World Cup. He wants to go back to the Premier League, according to some reports. Contract expires. He's not going to renew it. We thought this might happen with Mauricio Pochettino, but there's not really any jobs out there right now that make sense for him to go to. So does he do another job with the U.S. or does he let his contract expire and then say, you know what, I'm going to be that guy that everybody wants to hire when somebody gets fired, because somebody will get fired before Thanksgiving in one of the major leagues, because that always happens. We'll find out. Number two, Memo Ochoa, the legendary Mexican goalkeeper. He said in an interview with FIFA that once his run with the national team ends at the end of this tournament, he doesn't see any more meaning in continuing to play. He went to Cyprus to play, to get to this point, to be available just in case. Just in case became a thing because you had injuries at the position. And Memo Ochoa was brought back. He's on the bench. He's there to support. But he is one of the all-time greats in our region, and especially in the World Cup. Ochoa has been a monster for Mexico in his career.
Oh, he's insane. He is literally insane. I think for me, you know, I feel like it's definitely going to be weird when you see a call-up or something and he's not going to be there for Mexico. I'm be like, where is he? Like, what do you mean? Yeah. At this rate, I feel like he's just like, he has to be there. No, he's had an incredible career, and I think especially when you look ahead to everything else, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, especially with him coming out and saying it, but I will say he will definitely be missed. He's one of the greats.
Number three on the headlines, you've got a back and forth brewing with Korean media because Korean journalists were allegedly caught on a hot mic mocking Sun Heung-min's military service. That is something that's mandatory in South Korea. And I think with a lot of elite athletes, it is cursory. It's a lot of when they're in an off season, it's stuff with like the equivalent of the reserves, depending on the country. This is common. This happens all the time. The journalists were mocking this, and it was heard by the team and the federation, and they were very upset to the point that Korean players have boycotted speaking to the media up to this point. They have to do mandatory media tomorrow. So we'll see how they handle that. It could be spicy for the Koreans. They play Mexico in the next game, which is going to be an amazing game out in Guadalajara with the Korean crowd and the Mexican crowd, which have become very good friends over the last couple of World Cups. Now they're going to play against each other. And the winner will likely win that group. It's the same kind of setup as the U.S. group with two teams going in on 3 points. Number four on the headlines, Tim Payne. We've talked about him. He was the precursor to what Vocinha has ended up being for Cabo Verde. Tim Payne plays for New Zealand. It was an Argentine streamer who's like, hey, this guy's only got like 4,000 followers on Instagram. Let's boost those numbers up. And now he's got, I think, over 5 million or so. He's played in New Zealand his whole career outside of a stint with Portland Timbers' second team. Well, now he's going to Paraguay. He's going to sign with Olimpia to be part of their Copa Sudamericana run in the second half of the year. And that's directly because of all this exposure. So wild times in this World Cup. I'm waiting to see where Vucinha ends up signing because he's out of contract at the end of the year. All right, three things that make us smile. Number one, last night, New Zealand, Tyler Bendon. He came off the bench in the draw with Iran. and became part of history. It is the first ever mother-son duo in World Cup history. His mother, Jenny, played goalkeeper for New Zealand back in 2007 and 2011. And now Tyler Bendon in 2026 has played for New Zealand. The first time ever in history a mother and son have played in the World Cup.
That's awesome. I think that's so cool. I did not know that. So it's always great whenever you send me the rundown. Sometimes, especially for the for this segment, for the 3-4-3, I kind of like to be surprised a little bit, especially with the things that make me smile. That one, I didn't not even realize. That's so cool. Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
I've got sources all over the world. My list of bookmarks is out of control, and my browser automatically translates a whole lot of different languages. That one didn't need it, thankfully, with New Zealand, but a really cool story. I was happy to see that one. This one's kind of a funny one. Sweden, their defender, Gustav Lagerbilk, he comes from Swedish nobility. His father and grandfather are counts. He says he had the family coat of arms, which is a big deal for his family, on his shin pads as a kid. British media reported that he is 254th in line to the Swedish throne. He said, I don't want it because that would mean a whole lot of people have got to go before me. And I don't want that to happen. So I'm good where I'm at. But these are the World Cup crazy things that happen. These are the fun things about this tournament.
I just, like, the fact that there'd be that many people, he's having to be like, no, the amount of people would have to, that he's like,
yeah, people are like,
that.
Oh, don't you want to be king someday? He's like, no, there's a whole lot of people in line in front of me.
He's like, no, I'm okay.
I'm fine being whatever I am. A baron, I think, is what he qualifies as in Sweden.
Wow.
Okay. Number three on things that have made us smile lately. Scotland's fans make everybody smile. They took over Fenway Park over the weekend. They took over Foxborough. They took over seven school buses that they let out of Boston. They have blown people's minds in Boston. And man, we tried to tell y'all, like, wherever Scotland got drawn, and every bar owner in Atlanta that I know, and I actually know a few, which is funny, every bar owner was begging for Scotland to get drawn to Atlanta. And here's why. Two reasons. The first one is pure money. In Boston, St. Patrick's Day weekend, St. Patrick's Day parade, and usually if it's on like a Thursday, it turns into the whole weekend. That is a huge day, bigger than we get here for St. Patrick's Day. And St. Patrick's Day is a day that I don't go out to a bar. I want to be nowhere near a bar. In Boston, that's like Christmas for bars. Well, it got reported today that the Scots being in town for this game over the weekend doubled or tripled what a normal St. Patrick's Day is for Boston bars. And people are like, really? Yes. Yes, you should have ordered more beer. There are places in Boston out of beer. The Scots drank it all.
Listen, Scotland is the amount of videos I've been seeing on my TikTok. I saw one today where it was someone was like, someone eat their plane tickets. Don't let them leave. They're like, let them stay. And I said, okay. I mean, honestly, like it is so funny. I think there was a street performer singing 500 Miles.
That's one of their songs, fire, yes.
And Scotland fans on the street came over and started just like jamming, you know, having a fun time with them. Like, and someone went, his tips are going to be insane. And I went, yes, they will be. And then they took over a baseball stadium. Look at them go.
It's wild. And here's the really big thing that makes us smile about the Scottish fans. So the Boston hotels were very expensive. And if you know Gillette, you know, Foxborough, and I can tell you this from Atlanta United experiences, if you go to Boston and fly in, or you go to Providence and fly in and stay in those cities, it's the same distance to Foxborough. It's about 45 minutes or so, an hour plus with traffic. So a lot of Scottish fans went to Providence and they stayed there and took over Providence in the same way and are donating close to $30,000 to local causes there, including the Hasbro Children's Hospital Cancer Unit. So they're drinking a lot of beer, but they're also making a lot of donations to local causes, which is awesome. That's the stuff that happens in this World Cup. That's what makes us smile. That's what makes us excited. Argentina makes us excited tonight. That's 9 o'clock. Tomorrow, we'll be back at 10 o'clock on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app to break it all down. Adios, everybody.
Lemonade! Fresh squeezed lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.